Attention contractors, on May 6th, you're invited to a free web class all about hiring. Look, there's no denying we're in a skilled labor shortage, and it feels impossible these days to hire good people. But I've conducted over 2,400 interviews for trades positions, and I'm telling you, this can be done. You're just kind of doing it wrong. So, if you want the best performing job ad templates contractors are using in 2025, some simple interview tactics that are going to double your show up rates, and some tips to become the only place in town that A players want to work, this web class is for you. May 6th, let's make it happen, and I'll see you there. Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. My name is Danny Kerr, and I'll be your host for today's bonus episode featuring Matt Reisinger, CEO of Reisinger Builds and the founder of the Build Show Network. A few weeks ago, Matt and I co-hosted a web class where we went through one of the most important topics in business, finance. On top of teaching hundreds of attendees our approachable financial management systems, I actually had a chance to pick Matt's brain about his experience managing cash flow as he grew his company into the monster that it is today. So, we're releasing the web class as a podcast to give you everything you need to run your finances like a six-figure contractor. Oh, and make sure you grab the resource bundle in the link in the description. Those templates will make your life a hell of a lot easier. So let's get into it. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. So we've got a better part of an hour to get into some of these financial secrets for contractors, things that are, I think a lot of us don't do, or if we do, we do half well, that if we did well, we would probably avoid a ton of pain in our organization. And I think it's fairly timely because if we have been watching the news lately, which I'm sure all of us have, things shift in the economy and we really don't know what's going to happen next. And I'm sure whether it's good or it's bad, we as an organization, us as individual entrepreneurs, need to know how to adjust, right? I think about a lot of this, and Matt, maybe you're no different than me, but I'm going to be an entrepreneur for the rest of my life. I'm unemployable. I think if I got a job at this point, they'd probably fire me. So if that's true, and that's true for a lot of us probably as well, like we need to get good at not just having our gut and how we make good calls and our creative thoughts. We need to get good at our metrics. We need to see what's actually going on in our organization. We can make more informed decisions because it gets us through crazy times. It gets us through high times and low times. Actually, I've seen people go bankrupt going through like way too much growth as well as just way too little. So those adjustments matter. And that is what we're going to be up to today. I'd be curious in the chat before we even get rolling. How many of you, just because we're on this topic a bit, how many of you were around in 2008? Matt, I know we've got lots of stories. Yeah, Matt was. Yeah, I was. It was crazy, right? And it was kind of like, oh my God, so much is happening externally to me. But I will say that's when I got good at a lot of what we're going to talk about today, because I realized like there's levers that you can pull internally that regardless of what happens externally, you have options. If you're unaware of those levers or you don't use them properly or they're rusty and they don't even turn anymore, like you can fall victim to changing economies or changing economics. So any comments on that?
I was going to say, Danny, we're going to talk about this a little bit during the course of it, but I want to say it was someone on your team that I heard in the past say, revenue is vanity and profit is sanity. This might have been a Benji thing, actually. And it really struck me that the first many years of my company, all I was trying to do was get to a bigger and bigger revenue. I got to be bigger. I got to hire people. I got to get to, you know, I got to do 2 million, I got to do 5 million, I got to get to 10 million, whatever the number was. But that number is such a vanity. It really doesn't matter. What really matters is what's your profit. And are you playing at this or are you actually running a business? And so I'm going to probably tell you a few stories from my first 10 years or so in business of lots of mistakes I made. This is my 20th year in business, but I'll be honest, I was not a very good businessman for the first 10 years of my, for half of my entrepreneurial career and barely made any profit a few years in that time. So in hindsight, I honestly wish I would have met you and your team sooner, Danny. I've got some other stories about how I was able to kind of right the ship that we'll get into. But as we think about the title here, the financial secrets of $10 million contractors, I think the biggest thing I could tell you is if you look under the hood of your competitors that look like they're doing a lot or have big companies, it may not be as well run a ship as you're expecting. And to your point, Danny, I can think of one of my competitors 15 years or so ago that I really idolized. Always dressed well, had a fabulous Land Rover. He was the president of our local association, and he went out of business in the recession. And as I heard from subs that weren't paid, and long story short, not everyone who makes $10 million in revenue is actually making any profit. And so what we're going to get into today is things that are going to truly make a difference in your business, which will ultimately make a difference in your personal life as well.
Is this quote by Peter Drucker, which is "what gets measured gets managed." And it's been a neat perspective for me working with all these contractors. So those who don't know me, I'm Danny Kerr, one of the co-founders of Breakthrough Academy, but I've worked with contractors for myself, contractor from 18 to 26, and then coaching entrepreneurs and now in Breakthrough Academy, hundreds, if not thousands at this point. And I've seen that like when you start to see what's really going on, you can actually make tangible actions and efforts in the right direction. But when we just feel it, when it's just like a feeling of like, we need more, you're right, Matt. Like we resort to this, like we should do more revenue. And it's just like, guys, like that is like one lever. And actually in a lot of cases, if you're not profitable in the revenue you're doing, ramping that up is going to destroy you. So what gets measured gets managed, right? You can't change what you don't see. And my business partner, he always reminds me of this every year. He's like, Danny, you realize like, we're going to talk about budgeting today, but without a proper budget, like, and all of us do this every year, you all have an envelope of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in overhead that you're going to go give out this year. But if you don't even know what's in that envelope, you're putting your entire business at risk. Because did you allocate that money accordingly? Or is it just like, yes, this year we want to go do 4 million and we'll pay whatever it costs to do that, right? It's like, what is in that envelope? So yeah, very some great things we'll get into. Matt, I'm sure most people know who you are, but maybe a bit of an intro on who you are. And actually one thing I would love is you're taking your time to do this. You're a busy human. Why do you feel that this important or this topic is so important?
So briefly, my name is Matt Reisinger. I'm in Austin, Texas. If you don't know me, I've been a contractor for 30 years now. I started as a 22-year-old, so you can do the math. I've been in business for myself for 20 years now. And most of you who do know me, if you do, it's because I make some dorky videos about nerdy stuff about construction. But as I said at the top of the hour, you know, I really was extremely unprofitable my first decade in business. I made a couple of really key business mistakes prior to the last recession where I was doing speculative builds. I totally got caught with my pants down. And a house in particular really took me down that I started right before the recession hit. It's one of the reasons why I really talk a lot about builders not doing speculative projects because it's extremely risky. So when I finished that speculative house in 2010, I wasn't able to sell it for 2 years. I was mowing the lawn and cleaning it and doing open houses for two solid years, as well as paying the interest only loan payments. And when I finally sold it in 2012, I cemented a $300,000 loss. I went to closing on the house and I was able to pay off the construction loan, but I still had the land loan from my investor. To the tune of $300,000 that I had to pay. And oh, by the way, I didn't have a nickel of profit in there either. So at the end of 2012, I had $300K in an investor loan I had to repay back. I also had just shy of 50 grand. I think I had $48,000 in credit card debt that I was at the top of my limit on both cards that I had, basically. So, you know, when we talk about these financial controls and thinking about being a profitable builder, this is real stuff for contractors like me. I mean, I was this close from declaring Chapter 11. I mean, the thing I always say is, you know, growing up, I learned how to pray, which is "Give us this day our daily bread." You know, that prayer, the Lord's Prayer. It really meant something to me as a 30 something year old contractor. I was able to pay that off in 2015. And the last 10 years I've been debt free. And it also really kicked me in the pants to say, you know, I got to stop running this business like playtime. I absolutely need to make a profit. And I totally changed around a bunch of things that I did. We're going to talk about that today. a lot of what I do today is very similar to things that you guys might learn through Breakthrough Academy. But I had to hire a I had to hire a six-figure plus person to help me as my general manager in that time and really teach me and train me in some of these principles that we're going to talk about today.
You know, what's interesting, Matt, is I find, so we work with landscapers and painters and renovators and roofers and all these different trades. The building trade is the one where you maintain or you retain the largest amount of risk, like the amount of like costs you have to pay in materials and subcontractors and your team and then the overhead that comes with the company. And you're just having a sliver of that come back to you. And it's the smallest sliver in all the industries I work with. And it's the largest cost base that you guys have to manage. So of any trade that we work with, of any contracting space that we work with, this is the builder specifically. This topic probably should matter the most. And I hope it will. So, let's move forward a bit. Let's talk about what we're getting into. So what's the plan? I want to make sure we share with you guys effective budgeting tactics. I think some of you have built budgets, some of you may not have, but I'm going to show you a simple way to do this so that you can have a forecast for the entire year, know what's coming and know where you need to allocate all this capital. And why? Because we need to drive ROI, right? We shouldn't be just spending money wastefully, which I'm sure all of us waste money. I get it. It happens when we're reacting. We need to be better at this because we live on the margins, and the margins in building specifically are much thinner than any other industry I work with. Outcomes, we'll give you some building blocks for a better approachable financial system. And I'll get into this in a bit, but we're going to give you some templates as well today. So things that you can actually use to build into the topics or the concepts we talk about today. So you download them, take some time on your own. It's a little goodie bag for being here. We'll give them at the very end, but we'll give you a chance to build out this stuff as well, which would be cool. So overall agenda, we'll talk about annual budgeting, effective forecasting, and then here's an interesting topic, how to take these numbers that we figure out and get your team to rally around them. So it's not just you alone holding the ball and all this stuff, and really just how to implement some change. Here's the templates. There's just a screenshot of them for now anyways, but they're fairly simple. We use this with all of our members. So at Breakthrough Academy, when we're starting with a member, we have to get their budget set up. We have to get their like forecast set up. We have to know what is the plan so we have something to pivot against. And so these templates are things we use with our members. Take them. They're free to use. And this should give you a good heads up on what to do next. And we'll put those. I think there'll be a link in the chat at the very end and also a little blue bubble pop up for you guys. So that'll be good. One other thing I want to say. So there is over 500 of you online right now. Plus, I'm sure the replay, there'll be more of you watching this. We're going to cover topics that go from, I would say, bare bones, basic structural stuff that all companies need to have in place to things that are a little more advanced. And I want each one of you, depending on where you're at in business, just to pick one thing. You don't need to do all of this tomorrow. And chances are, if you try to, you probably won't do any of it. So you get the download package with all of this stuff. As we talk today, kind of decide like, what is the one thing that we need to go do? What is the first next kind of best step? So that is the plan. First question to those of you in the chat, I see you guys rocking in there, which is great. Answer me this. I would love to know from your own perspective, like, why is staying on top of your numbers so hard? What's getting in the way? What are the barriers and blocks that are happening? When you think about last year, maybe you had the best intentions, things got away on you a little bit. What's going on? And Matt, while they're doing that, like, I would love to hear from you just in those early days, like, what was so hard about this when you were trying to manage your financials while building things every day? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think on several fronts, Danny, as entrepreneurs, we're a little bit naturally folks that are okay with taking some risks, right? You know, we wouldn't have left our jobs with other companies and started whatever we're doing now had we not been okay with some amount of risk. The problem for me was I didn't know what I didn't know. You know, I was probably honestly a little cocky about running a business. Figured, you know, I'd done some business. I'd had some businesses in the past. And by that, I mean, I was a one-man show doing various things, whether it was sales jobs in school or other things. I didn't really truly understand the business side of building. And so running a business was extremely eye-opening to me. You know, I remember I also had a young family when I started my company. I remember being up half the night with a crying kid and then thinking, oh my gosh, I got to figure out how to run these checks tomorrow on my QuickBooks before I get to the job site and be at the job site at, you know, 7:30 to meet the tile contractor. Like that feeling of being overwhelmed by the task and by the amount of things I didn't know how to do well, but I had to do because I was the only one to do them. was a feeling that I can still remember to this day. And so, you know, being able to being able to put your business together in a way that, that you truly understand what you're doing. And one of the biggest things that I did, or one of the best things I did, was I got a financial dashboard set up for me by a buddy that I hired who was a part-time CFO. And that enabled me to budget correctly on an annual basis. And it also enabled me to at a month realize whether I was going to make money or not make money this month. You know, as entrepreneurs, we're used to lumpy cash, you know, not taking a paycheck for a while, then taking a big paycheck because you got to pay some stuff. And frankly, I treated my company bank account like my personal bank account for the first couple of years. That was a huge mistake. So, I mean, there's just a lot to absorb as a young builder, as a young contractor, as a young entrepreneur. And years later, once you have systems put in place, I think it was really starting in the 2015, 2016, 2017 phase that I realized, gosh, I'm in such a better place than I was 10 years ago. And now here we are 20 years in business. And I can tell you that my business runs, frankly, without much of my involvement at all. It's something I don't talk about in my videos a whole lot, Danny, but I probably spend less than 10% of my working hours on my home building company.
Come a long way, man. I think a lot of us do. We get into the craft because we love it. It's fun. It's fun to build. It's fun to see what we can create. It's fun to see the reactions from the people we build for. And you go down the line, you realize this is only half the skill set that's required to be successful. There's this whole other pool of things in business that nobody's going to teach you. And it's so interesting for me because entrepreneurship is one of those rare things that's probably as complicated as being a doctor, but there's no path for it. So we just got to kind of figure it out as we kind of fall. So yeah, I get it. And I agree. I'm going to show you guys something that's interesting for us. So right now we have about 650 businesses we work with, all in the contracting space. We've worked with over 1500 over the last 10 years. I asked our coaches, and I see this when we do our assessments, but how many actually have some financial controls in place, even just a basic budget? 75% don't have it coming in. And they have it in their head, or they have something written down that's rough, but it's not like detailed. And we're going to show you guys today what this looks like. But what this translates into, the average member coming into Breakthrough Academy right now is between negative 2% and 4% in net profit. Like this is not good. This is not good, sustainable way to run an organization. And yet I know that this is happening in the marketplace in general, because I think a lot of us, to what you just spoke about, like we get into this for very different reasons than sitting down and putting our nose down in the spreadsheet. But if we don't, we're not in business for very long. So
100%. I mean, if you take my stories of building that spec in the recession and starting to figure out how to run an actual business, I was probably closer to -5 or -10% net profit for a period of time there. A couple of people in the comments alluded to it. I don't think I've said it here, but when I finally sold that speculative house I was building in 2012, after sitting on the market for 2 years, I still had the payments to make, even though I didn't own the house, because I was paying off my investor on the land debt. And at the office, we called that $7,000, I think it was, or $6,500 a month. We called it Chuck. It was our employee that was sucked, but that we couldn't fire. So, you know, when I finally paid off Chuck in 2015, I felt like I got a big raise. You know, I was finally able to pay myself on a regular monthly basis, like a set amount. I forget what it was. It was, you know, $5,000 a month or whatever. I could pay myself every month. And that regular, like, first of the month, $5,000, that was such a feeling of relief. Like, oh my gosh, this is fabulous, being able to put $5,000 in my account at the beginning of every month, not having to pay that Chuck payment every month, firing Chuck. So I think that -2 to -4 is extremely common in my travels around North America.
How many in the chat, how many of you have a Chuck right now? I mean, you got a Chuck weighing you down. The whole U.S. economy has a Chuck. We've got a massive Chuck.
I mean, honestly, we do. We're a debt economy. I mean, I see a couple of people say that they are Chuck. Don't fire yourself. You know, we're so used to as Americans being in debt that it doesn't faze us that we've got, I don't know how many trillions or billions or whatever the number is in national debt. But that's not good for our economy. And it hasn't always been that way. And, you know, this isn't a political conversation, but no matter who's in the office, we should think about not only a balanced budget, but paying off debt. And I would tell you, as a business owner, you don't want a bunch of debt. Since 2015 that I've been out of debt, I have yet to buy a vehicle on credit. I've yet to buy any equipment for my business on credit. We only pay cash. And if you've been watching some of my videos, I did build another speculative house recently, but I didn't build it as a traditional spec. In fact, I sold it as a loss and I was totally fine with that because I got additional sponsorship. So don't take me doing a video series about a house and having it as a Build Show Live kind of show house as something that you should do as a contractor. I am absolutely anti-spec. I think there's plenty of paying people out there that want your services, and we should absolutely go for a normal profit margin where we can do well as contractors and build businesses that we can pass on to our kids or sell someday.
Sometimes the biggest opportunity are in the least fancy of things. And it's just about being disciplined and rigorous to the process. We do a lot of work every year, and I think a lot of it gets burned up in mistakes and things that we're just trying to maybe impress ourselves, or it's a bit of our own passion and we're missing on the core metrics.
I love the quote, by the way, Danny. That's a great one for me and Bryce. As a side note, just in full transparency here, I am not a Breakthrough Academy. I've never used BTA in their services. However, I was involved in bringing them onto Build Show Network. And when did you start? 2021, Danny? 2022?
I met you guys in 2020. I think probably 2021 we got rolling, yeah.
So about 3 to 4 years ago, we started having basically their podcast, for lack of a better term, their content on our Build Show Network site. And I think these guys are fabulous. I mean, there's not another company that I know of in the entire industry that will act as your general manager that has what I would consider a very reasonable amount for their services. They don't own a piece of your business. They want you to succeed, but they don't profit in your success. Let's put it that way. But they're giving you the tools to be successful contractors. And one of the reasons why I love having Danny, your team on Build Show Network, is because well-built houses need to be built by builders that are profitable. There's been plenty of builders I can think of over the years that built a fabulous house, but they didn't stay in business. And we're not going to elevate our standards in North America's construction by companies that aren't profitable. We need profitable companies that are healthy and thriving and building healthy houses where people can thrive in them. So it goes hand in hand, building great houses and building a great business.
I also just think this whole industry benefits from it. I want to pull you guys in and be honest with me as you can. I know this is a webinar, but I would love to hear from you guys. How much money do you think got burned up in just like useless mistakes from last year? If you were to give a dollar to it, we've got 570 people in here right now. Give us a number, because I bet you it's not small. And that's just 570 of us. So Kenny, thanks for starting. 50K, 30K, 170K, 30%. Yeah, right there. Look at these numbers. There's so much wastage in this. And that gets passed down to our customer. That gets passed down in lack of being able to give our people good raises, our ability to pay ourselves properly. And it's like, if we just took a little bit of time, and I'm going to give you these tools in a second on a few of these things we're going to go over today, a lot of this would get cleaned up. Like, I'm not going to add all this up, but we're already in the millions, right? And there's so many of us as contractors that we let it slide because we'll do better next time. But what are we learning from this? And what are we actually changing? So let's get into this. There's three core systems I want to cover today. And the first, I'd say, is bare bones. And it starts with budgeting. So again, in the chat, how many of you have a written down budget for the year? So you've got the amount of revenue you want to produce, what your variable expenses are going to cost you, your overhead costs, and what you've allocated for all the different expenses. And then you've got a target for profit. So some yeses, some no. Yeah, give me some yeses and nos. It's fine. Either way is fine. This is the most basic of tools that I think if we do nothing else today and you don't have these, so those of you who have a no, let's get this dialed in today. We're going to give you a template on this as well. So what are we doing here? We're just trying to understand last year's results, right? We're going to leverage to build in next year's plans. We're going to look at where were we ahead, where were we behind, by how much and why, and then we're going to allocate that to the right resources, right? There's another opportunity in this. How many of you that build your own chart of accounts versus having them given to you, or you have a template you use, or your accountant's telling you where you, what all the line items should be. How many of you have built your own though? You took some time and said, no, I'm going to build mine. This is even more impressive. So good. So there's a couple of yeses. If we don't do this, we're going to do often what's called financial accounting, which is getting things ready for the tax man so we can get taxed. There's a difference between financial accounting and managerial accounting. And what I mean by that's fancy words. What I mean by that is like doing what's right just so that you can write off stuff at the end of the year versus doing what's right so you can manage your entire organization. In these numbers I'm going to show you, this is where all the levers, or a lot of these levers, start to lie, right? So there'll be a resource on this. It's fairly simple. There's three major columns. I'm going to show you what they look like here in a second, but you guys can download this. And if you haven't built a budget, please do. And if you have built a budget, but there's some stuff in this you like, I highly recommend you take a look at this thing. So what is this? And it's basic, most like understanding of what this is. It's essentially looking at last year's actuals, right? So our revenue, our variable expenses, some of our overhead, and then piece by piece, placing costs into next year. And thinking like, what should be more, what should be why, or what should be less, by how much and why, right? Line item by line item. And this gives us a chance to actually balance out where we're ahead, where we're behind throughout the year as well. So we'll start with this first section here. I'll give you some terms as we go as well, but you can see at the top, we've got our revenue stream. So this company is doing 3.7 million. They're looking at basically going for next year for 4.1. So not a huge amount of growth. And they're piece by piece thinking through what are the variable expenses we project to spend. So if we spend 13% on wages last year, we project about 12.3 next year. How are they doing that? Well, it looks like they're only providing some increases to their current team, but not adding new team members and doing a marginally increased amount of revenue. Here's a big one. I don't know if you've done this, Matt, or maybe I imagine you have, but they have a 41.8% cost on subs in their last fiscal year and have chosen to get it down to 38. Now, I see our members do this all the time, and they're like, it's going to be 38. And I'm like, how? And they're like, well, we're just going to do better. I'm like, no, like it doesn't.
Do better.
You're better. Work harder. It's like, no, like specifically, like what are you doing to create numerical changes year over year? Right. So this is just an example. But in this one, it's like, look, like we've had subs submit, you know, work orders to us that are late or we don't get approved by our customer. And tell me in the chat, how many of you have eaten the cost because your subs are submitting stuff and you either are through embarrassment or you just think it's not right? You eat the cost in the middle, right? Well, there's 3 or 4% right there.
Yep.
Right. That's so incredible. What are we changing? We're going to implement an online approval process for our subs to do their change orders through that the customer approves, we approve, and now it's airtight. Yep. Because if there's wastage, we need to do something about it. And it's not just to do better. It's like, what specifically are you doing? So for those of you who have budgets, if there was one little tip I gave you along the way, go and do exactly what I'm showing you, last year's actuals versus this year's plan. But then when you change the metrics, when you actually change the percentages here, write what you're actually going to change. Like this becomes the implementation path for the next fiscal year.
That's such a big deal for me, Danny, as a cost plus custom builder. You know, if I've got a couple charges from, let's say, a credit card that don't go on a draw request or get missed somehow, we eat those, and man, that absolutely eats your lunch at the end of the year when you add those up. And the other thing for us as a cost plus builder is throughput. It's true for cost or for fixed price guys as well, but we have a metric of how much we're looking to have billing on each job each month. And every one of my project managers knows exactly what that number is. And if we miss that number, for the month, you know, let's say you have a job that you need to be billing 150,000 on that month and you only bill 100 because whatever, whether it's rain or permit issues or subs or you're waiting on a customer for a change order, it's really hard / impossible to make up that 50K that you lost this month on throughput in coming months to try and still make your profit goals for the year. And one thing that we've done as a cost plus builder is we've given a profit share to our whole team based on us making our profit goals for the year. So we have bonuses that are tied to those numbers and everybody knows what their numbers are. So everyone plays a part so that I don't get that fighting on, hey, I need that guy in my job, but I need him on my job. No, we're all on the same team. It's the same bonus. So, you know, let's figure out how to get this thing done.
Yeah, all of you are in the game of percentages. It's this 1% here and this 1% there that'll either make you quite profitable at the end of the year or not, basically, right? And it's fighting for these percentages that matter. And you can't fight for them if you don't even look at them or if you don't even plan for them. So this is a neat example because what I look at more often than just the number is the actual percentages themselves. So by bringing this up a bit, by being a bit tighter on how we give our raises this year, knowing we're going into a harder year, we're securing projection. Now, it's just projections at this point, but from an 18% GP, gross profit, to 22.6. And these are small, minute changes. But when you look at an entire business, like this is where the game is won and lost. So this is, if we're looking at the top line stuff, this is your revenue. This is your variable expenses. So these are the things that directly are tied to producing the work that you do for customers. But there's also overhead, right? This stuff doesn't change no matter how much work you go produce. And no different is the same process. It's piece by piece thinking through what strategically do we need to add or change or remove that provides an ROI for our organization. And Matt, the referral you had given me the other day, I had this exact conversation with him, which was he had hired a project manager in the past. It did not go well. I don't know if he fired him or the guy left or whatever had happened, but he's back to just like him and a very smaller org, right? He wants to stay small for now. And he's got a lot of this like baggage or just like fear around hiring another PM again. He's like, well, what if I don't make him? And I'm like, dude, he said to me, he's like, should I be saving 3 months, 6 months, like years worth of that guy's salary before I even start to hire that person? I'm like, no. Like you need to go look at your numbers and you need to go through budget by budget, piece by piece and say, okay, what can we afford? If we do this revenue, if we make this much GP, how much can we allocate to these different things? And here's the things, guys, like money in your personal is very different than money in your business. Money in your business is energy. It's things you can allocate to be able to save time, to be able to create new opportunities, to be able to grow, to be able to be more profitable, whatever it is, but it's energy. And it's how you allocate that energy. It's how you dole that out and choose to dole that out ahead of time that enables the success of your organization. So you can see just in this example, like, hey, we want to hire a new project manager. But when I look at my cash flow situation and when I look at what we want to go do this year, I probably shouldn't hire them till late Q3. And so we've got an increase of cost here. Great. It's good to know. But we're not going to go hire them this quarter. We know that Q3 is the right time. We also know that for this to be stable and we want a nice stable year-over-year cost on our management staff and salaries, we probably should set the owner up with a paycheck and not have them, like you just said earlier, the feast and the famine, the lumpy cash, right? Like, what is the consistent amount that we can pay ourselves every single month so that we can have a stable life at home and we can rely on this given the budget that we've set forward? So, yeah, there's lots in here. I mean, all I would say is this isn't about trying to cut costs everywhere. This is about allocation. And so where should we spend more money? You can see even here, I put $17,000 into recruitment over the $6,000 I spent last year because we know we want to hire a really good project manager. We don't want to mess up on this. So think of this overhead section as like your allocation of energy. Where do you need energy to go? And what's the stories behind it that really play out? Then you know that you'll do well from this or not. And when you look at last year's, you can really start to see where the wastage lives. They're like, wow, we spent how much on the office? Like, are we really getting something out of that? We spent how much on like, you know, equipment and tools, whatever it is. It's like, was that just a nice shiny object or did that actually provide an ROI?
I'll give you a quick personal example on that, Danny, real fast that we implemented. You know, the last two of the years with COVID, we did very well as a general contractor. We were plenty busy, yada, yada. We ended up buying lunch for the office a fair amount, you know, like a pizza lunch, a whatever lunch. But with a medium size, I consider ourselves a medium sized team. We have like 13 or so in our construction team and 4 or 5 in our labor company. So, you know, you get 18 people together. It's a lunch out or a lunch in even can get expensive. We looked at that over the course of the year and we're like, oh my gosh, this was a lot of money. And my business partner, Tim, said, why don't we still do that? But let's just do that like once a month and we'll celebrate anyone's birthday that's in that course of the month. And we'll still do one, you know, barbecue lunch at the office. The rest of the time, though, we still want people to eat here. And so instead, we're going to spend like $200 or $300 a month on groceries. And now we keep sandwiches and cheeses and fresh bread and fruits and chips in our office or fridge. And on any given day, you'll see 4 or 5 people eating a sandwich, maybe bringing their lunch and talking. And so if you don't bring your lunch, you can grab some of our stuff. And now our bottom line is like 25% of what it was in that expense category. And that really adds up when you do that over a couple of things. So as just one personal example, you know, get together and get some ideas on how you can reduce those expenses. You'll be surprised what people suggest.
You know what you're speaking to, I think about a lot, is this concept is that like money doesn't always create more money. You know what creates vastly more amounts of profit in an organization is creativity.
Yeah.
Well, and creativity to problem solve that waste, to actually think critically about like, what are we actually doing?
That's right. And
you're the only one as the owner that's going to be able to look at last year's numbers. And those are going to mean a lot more than just numbers on a spreadsheet. They're stories.
Yeah.
They're specifics. They're people. They're times you've had where you're like, right, like, what are we actually doing? And until you spend an annual ritual of doing, going through this every single year, that stuff just continues on without notice.
Yep.
It's good. I want to show some impact on this. So I playing around with these charts, I made very little changes. Most of the stuff I just showed you was the only changes we'd really made. And we took this company's net profit from 3.5%, which is razor thin, up to 7.9%, more than doubled it, just by making a few changes. This wasn't massively complicated. And the reason I'm showing this is what I see with our members. We have some neat stats on our website that says average profit increase by 64% in the first 12 months. And our sales team always gets questions. They're like, how is that possible? And I'm like, guys, it's literally a couple percent on the bottom line, because what you're not spending in wastage on, you know, your subcontractor change orders or reallocation of some of your overhead can and should go down to the bottom line. And Matt, the building trade, like, this is where you guys you live on more razor thin margins than any other industry I work with. So true. 100% matters.
That's right. 100%.
And this gets extrapolated as you grow, right? So 1% on $1 million is $10,000. It's wasteful. It's not great. But when you start to grow the business with that same model and you don't look at these adjustments every year, 1% on a $10 million business is $100,000. Okay. That's an entire like PM salary. That's an entire person to basically take on half of your job as the entrepreneur. And yet I bet you, actually give me in the chat, how many of you wasted at least 1% last year on just stuff that you knew could have been avoided, but you didn't really want to address it, or you were just busy trying to just keep the train moving? I think almost all of us, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a lot more than 1% if we're honest. Yeah. Matt, anything else here on overhead?
No, let's keep going, Danny. This is really good. Hopefully my stories didn't put us back on time too far.
No, we're good. And you've got into it a little bit already. Is there anything else just on shifts you recommend and what you made, which doing budgeting? I think you just got into some of it. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said before, but we started really budgeting for the business more formally in 2015. And the thing that really got my attention, or that really helped me understand it better, was, you know, when you're running a small business, when things slip, whether it's a schedule or whatever, it's extremely hard to make that annual profit budget if you're not doing what you need to do on a month-by-month basis, right? You break the year into 12 months and you've got a very specific goal every month. When you miss a goal on a month, man, it is super, super difficult to make that up. And so the thing that budgeting does for you is it gives you that regular motivation. It's kind of like stepping on the scale every day at home. Like if you're trying to lose weight and you only stepped on the scale every couple of weeks, you wouldn't have that much motivation. You'd be like, oh, I'm just going to eat these ho-hos today. No big deal. You know, I got to step on the scale in 6 weeks. I got plenty of time. But if you're like, hey, I'm going to step on the scale every day, well, suddenly you forego the ho-hos because you realize, hey, I got to step on the scale tomorrow. And that's what budgeting does for us. It's that regular check-in to say, how are we doing? It's, you know, now what is this, April 8th when we're doing this? But if we're going to make our goals on December 31, April is vital for us to make those goals. And the other thing that I think budgeting really helped my entire team with was realizing, you know, when we think about getting a job to the starting line, it's months and months to get there. But boy, when we miss that target start that we said the house was going to start in, you know, whatever such date, and it doesn't, it slips a month or 2 months or whatever, your year profit may go to the wayside and no one's getting their bonus that year.
We're going to go with that and forecasting.
Yeah. I mean, this, we always call it a dashboard at our office. This dashboard of our financials just absolutely needs to be looked at on a regular basis.
All right. I want to also show, we pulled all of our members and we took some stats for you guys on what good looks like. So if you're wondering, like, what should I go for gross profit when I'm planning, what should I be trying to make net profit? Here you guys go. So if you're running an in-house labor model as a custom home builder, exceptional for gross profit is 28%, solid between 20 to 25, and anything below 18, you need to make some changes. There's something going on there that's not sustainable. Net, that translates to 15% or more. It's really good. Solid between 8 and 12. We see that quite often once we've got stability. Anything below 6, you're in red zone. You need to be careful. So hopefully this helps a few of you. They have an in-house labor model. You'll notice the subcontractor model. I hear this all the time. People are like, is it better to do in-house or subs? I'm like, it's actually kind of the same. It just depends what works best for you, right? Now, although your gross profit is lower, if you notice the net is the exact same because you have less overhead to manage. You have less complexity within the organization because you're subbing everything out. So yes, you might make less on the jobs themselves, but overall net, your company operationally should hit around the same. And so it's more about how do you go from needs work solid to exceptional based on your operational model and what works best for you. Remodelers, you guys have smaller jobs. You have a lot more going on. And actually, you have all the same complexities of managing a project that someone who's doing a custom home has, but you've got a lot of them, right? So you need to be able to make more gross profit off the jobs that you're producing because you have more overhead and more things going on to schedule and organize all the projects you have in your backlog. So 40% is exceptional, 30 to 35 is solid. Anything below 25, you need to watch out. Net profit, that equates to about the same as these builders, 15% exceptional, 8 to 25% or 8 to 12% solid and 6% net. Or sorry, below 6% net, you need help. So final one too, there's a few subs probably out there. I hear this all the time. They're like, man, my subs make a lot of money. Kind of. They do off the job, but then they have even more overhead than you do. And so they're making okay margins, even a little more than you are, but think about it. They have to do way more jobs to equal just one project that you put. And I call this, when I look at all these metrics, I call this the great equalizer in business. Like capitalism is capitalism. If there's an opportunity to be had, we've usually filled that opportunity. And so don't always look on the other side of the fence where the grass may be greener. Know what you do best and pit yourself against these metrics. And hopefully this helps give you some semblance of what great looks like. Other industries might be slightly different, but ultimately there is a reason why we need to hit the margins we need to hit. So, okay. Matt, I'm going to need to comment on this actually as well. There's also differences in the where you're at as a business, like your growth trajectory.
Yep.
Right? When you're owner-operator, this is usually where it's exciting. It's like, I'm making lots of money. I'm working on the projects myself. And they're like, what could possibly go wrong? And net income could be pretty good. Then you start to add overhead. You start to add project manager. You start to add an office. And gross profit also drops because you're not on every site anymore. You're not doing all the things you used to do.
Yep.
And net gets dangerously low. And this is where I watch a lot of people freak out and go back to owner-operator because like, whoa, that's not safe. The reality is we need to understand how to be more of a scaling strategist, how to squeak out. You can see the difference on the scaling strategist versus the leader. It's 5 extra percent. Squeak out that extra 5% GP by looking at everything that's going on job by job, project by project, company plan annually, budgeting it out. And these 1%, 2%, 3%, they all add up. And this is the only way we're going to go from owner operator to leader and slide into scaling strategist properly. Matt, I'm curious on your, what have you noticed just scaling over the years?
Yeah, quick comment on that, Danny. I was an owner operator for a long time and switched to becoming a leader where I had project managers and I wasn't in the field every day. That was a hard transition for me because I was very, not OCD. What's the version of OCD that's slightly below that? Where I'm like, I really want this done right. And I don't like how you're doing it because you're not doing it how I would
do
it.
Control freak.
That's probably the more, the one that doesn't require medication anyway.
Perfectionist. That's the nicer one. There you go.
Perfectionist. There you go. That's right. I would say I was perfectionist light. I always tell people these days that if you want a perfect house, you're going to pay through the freaking nose for it. I actually know one or two contractors that do perfect houses. And they're so expensive, you can't even believe the, billionaire clients they have to get to perfection. It's just a crazy sliding scale. But my point is to go from owner operator to leader was a pretty big mental jump for me and a pretty big hurdle. And on a kind of practical standpoint, one of the things that allowed me to do that was we stopped bidding subcontractors out and started using the same workforce over and over. Which allowed us to eventually get from leader to scaling strategist, you know, increasing our margins, using the same subs over and over, gaining a reputation. Someone asked me about my social media presence and whether that helps me increase margins and get jobs. I mean, ultimately, the answer is yes, absolutely. But the one thing to keep in mind is the contractors that you compete against that have beautiful Instagram feeds or beautiful website and finished projects, they have the same problems you do. They have clients who don't want to pay their final bill. They have a lawsuit that they've never, that the public doesn't know about from 2 years ago. They have all these things happening to them, just like is happening to you. So don't ever think, oh, if I finally get to be like that contractor, I'll have made it, which I did for a long time. Once I got up into those behind the curtain meetings, I realized, oh yeah, all my competitors in my town have the same problems I've had over the years. They're just good at hiding them and not talking about them. But ultimately, to get to that scaling strategist, you do need to make some hard decisions in your business. You do need to release some control of some of your perfectionism. You need to hire people that are better than you in really just about every position in your company. You want people that are smarter than you, that are more motivated than you, that are all those things. Because ultimately, if you're going to get to that position of having a predictable margin, scaling your business, you got to charge more, and you got to have a business that is producing happy and raving fans of yours. And that's how you're going to get to that scaling strategist. Now, I made it sound easy. That there's a lot of steps in it, but it is possible. And I know I can probably name 10 folks in my town that have gotten to that pinnacle.
I think the key thing is it takes discipline and consistency, and you have to be able to pick up on what's working and what's not and actually make real change versus just kind of use what worked in the beginning. And I think there's I watch it with a lot of our members. There's just like timing in business where it's like what got us here is no longer going to get us there. And I think that this is a lot of the stuff we're talking about today. For time, I'm going to move us into the next one. Financial forecasting. How many of you right now, I'll start with this first one, have some sort of sales pipeline that you manage? So give me in the chat, yes or no, but something where you're like, we've got the lead sources, we've got the customers, we've got rough contract value and what year they're going to hit, the plausibility of us booking them, write some notes. Perfect. I think a lot of us should have this. This gives us some semblance of what our pick list really is, actually, more than anything. And this isn't about booking all these jobs. It's about being able to understand what's potentially in the pipe, and you get to the next step in a second, but what works best for our production this fiscal year. It's about picking these jobs, not about winning every single one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll give this out as a template. It's a cool little simple design template that helps you just track and manage all the stuff you have in the pipeline. But what you want to do with this is as you get awarded jobs and as you start to pick the right ones, you can put them into your construction planner. So again, give me yes or no's in the chat. How many of you do construction planning where once a job has been booked, it's ready to go for production, you're choosing what month it's starting, and you start to break down all the invoiceable amounts that are going to equal this job in total, and then all the actual variable expenses right next to it. So when you're going to be paying out these portions as well. So I'll show you this actually as a document, because we're going to send you guys this. That's the sales one. There we go. So in this document, you're going to see here, you can pick basically, we've got like the CHAMS job. We've got when we roughly project it to start, what the expenses are going to be on it month by month, but we can put every single job in here that we want. So this is a totally different job. This is the Aetna job. And as we start to put each individual job in and when they're going to start and when the costs are going to hit on these things, I'll show you a couple more. We can actually start to put it into our last tab here called the construction planning tab. And what this will do is it'll add up all the different projects happening in those certain months and all the different projected invoices coming forward, all the different projected costs for doing those projects. And the nice thing is it's going to pit it against your actual overhead in the business. And what you're able to do is it's a bit of kind of like a laying rail on like a rail line. You can start to make sure, do we have profitability projected for the months moving forward in our company? And where does that profitability drop off? Right. So we can see right around August, we need some more stuff in the pipe in order to make sure we're profitable. You can also see different jobs. Like when we plan to do this, is this the right job to do in June versus maybe we should do this in August? And it allows you to make sure that cash flow will be steady throughout, and the way you're planning your projects are more, not just about like keeping your team busy, but about keeping your business profitable month in, month out. Any comments on this? Matt, can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was zoning out thinking about something. I made a comment in chat and someone asked me to explain it. I said, basically, you make all your money in pre-construction. And Danny, you said something I was lost in thought on. You basically said, you know, when you have a pipeline of clients, you probably don't want every one of those clients. And that's totally true. And to explain that phrase, we use it around the office a lot. You make all your money in pre-construction. I don't have the amount of time, but I'd basically say, look, you know, when you're interviewing for jobs, when you're talking to people, when you're in the estimating phase, you got to remember that it's vital that you get the right clients and the right projects in the door. And that if it's the wrong client and the wrong project, you don't want to do those jobs. And probably anybody who's been in business more than a year can think back on a half dozen jobs that they took because they needed the cash flow, because they had someone they didn't want to fire, because they'd hired someone and they needed a job for them. And you saw all the red lights, you saw all the stop signs, and you went forward with it anyways. And thinking back, you're like, gosh, I would have been better off not doing that job at all without foregoing that profit or whatever. So pre-construction is vital. Having a really good pre-construction process is vital. This is a bit of a tangent, but having a really good contract is vital as well. When we first meet clients, we do one free meeting, and then we tell them about our pre-construction process and our pre-construction agreement. And after we give them a free ballpark to try and align their expectations on cost with ours, that's when we go to a pre-construction agreement. And within a week, we send them our construction contract. We want to make sure that if they're going to bleed all over our contract, we know about it right away so that we can give them a refund on their pre-construction agreement and say, this is not going to work for us. You know, we're not going to sign your AIA contract, or you're not going to take ours and redline the whole thing and make changes. You know, whereas the client that makes a minor change, hey, you know, you said we didn't pay in the fifth, but you know, my bank's telling me it's going to take 4 days to do blah, blah, blah. So, you know, can we agree to the seventh? Okay, sure. I'm going to make that one change. But really, it is absolutely vital to remember that we make our profit in pre-construction, and we only want to take jobs that are going to be jobs that are going to make our long-term goals.
That's great. I think the way to really check this is to pit these jobs in hypothetically, the way they're structured, see how they impact. And if you need to make changes, you'll know right away. Yep. And you're like, this is not going to actually work. So
yeah.
Good. Yep. I want to make one more point on this, which a lot of our coaches focus on with our members, which is that money loves speed, right? Your overhead doesn't really care how much revenue you do. And it is kind of at the end of the day, how much like profitable revenue you can cram through in a given month. And if you want to look at being more profitable, it's not just about charging more or having a higher like cost plus project. It's being able to make sure that, hey, given the amount of overhead we have every single month, how much revenue can we cram through in that to make sure that we can make more overall margin in the organization?
Yep.
All right. Final point, driving numbers with your team. So I watch a lot of this with entrepreneurs I work with, and you guys probably feel the same. It's like you start to get to know all of this and you're the only one holding on to all of this. And you go to your production manager or project manager and you're like, hey, I need you to work faster. Hey, I need you to get this done in a better way. Hey, we need to change this whatever this specific thing is. And they don't understand why. And their input in how they make an impact on your business. So you talked about this a lot, Matt, but like having a dashboard matters. And so all this stuff we just showed you is great, but it needs to lead to something. And so you'll see this in the download we give you, but there is an actual dashboard where you can start to go goal versus actual on all your key numbers, whether it's financial metrics, sales metrics, you know, production metrics, and you can start to see where are we ahead, where are we behind, by how much and why. And then all the little pieces that I showed you. So for those of you who have sales managers or a project manager that in queue that you want to get into some of this stuff, we need to build an org chart where everybody has their number that they're directly in charge of that they can make direct impact on. So just in the chat, how many of you have an org chart? It doesn't have to look exactly like this, but you've got nodes, you've got to put you at the top, you've got your team below you. How many of you have built something like this in the past? What's interesting about the way we've structured this is we've got the company's goals that we planned out through the budget. We've started to build out our production schedules to start to see how things will drop. And we can start to say who's in charge of what number, right? So like even the office admin is in charge of keeping AR below 2%. You know, Annie's in charge of keeping gross profit in a certain production for her team. Sales manager is in charge of a certain amount of sales booked and a certain amount of quotes done.
but everybody has a number that they can champion based on their position or spot within the organization. We then use that to build in employment agreements. So this is going to enable you to not just say, here's a number you're in charge of, but here's how all your roles day in and day out apply to these numbers that you have to go achieve. And here's the kicker. We have to bring accountability to our people as well. So we do these meetings called GSNRs, where you basically are setting a goal every week, 2 weeks or month, but it's on a regular rhythm. You guys are checking in on things that they're in charge of. Where are they ahead? Where are they behind? And holding accountability, giving some direction and support, and ultimately managing the performance of your team as well. This is where you start to go from like owner-operator model of holding all this stuff yourself to empowering your team and giving them a chance to play in those numbers and be a part of the day-to-day that makes this these 1% go up or down. So, Matt, I mean, you alluded to this earlier, and I want to keep us tight for time. Maybe give us 1 or 2 minutes on this, but like, what? How did you, because you've scaled up your construction business. You've now moved into building out an amazing YouTube channel, an amazing influencer brand. How did you get away from the day-to-day and actually start to focus on building out the Build Show?
Yeah, to be honest, Danny, for me, it was a key hire. I think I mentioned I hired a general manager in 2015. And within a couple of years, really had moved a ton of my daily responsibilities over to him. And one interesting thing for me was I hired somebody that was formerly retired, who had come from another industry and I knew had an excellent business background, but didn't have the building background. It was actually a friend's dad who, said to me, "Hey, my dad's retired. You know, he loves watching your videos. I think he's a construction nerd. He's tired of playing golf 4 days a week. And he's thinking about starting a general contractor business." So I met with this guy and realized, gosh, he's got a fantastic business mind. You know, all I had to do was bring out my dashboard and he had 10 suggestions for how to do it better and had a million questions that I couldn't answer. And so long story short, I hired this guy as my GM. And within probably 3 or 4 years, I delegated, I don't know, 70% of what I was doing on a daily basis to this guy, or 80% maybe. Around that same time, I had a really key employee who was a former builder and was working for me as a project manager, let's call it, who said, "Hey, I'd really like to be a partner in this business with you, Matt. And I think that would allow you to spend more time on your other business." You guys may know I have 2 businesses. I have a construction business, Reisinger Build. And then I have a video production company that runs Build Show Live and the buildshow.com and all this other stuff. And so it allowed me to really focus on that business and making educational videos, doing all the stuff that you've seen me do on social media. And so now, a few years later, I think I said at the top of the hour, I probably only spend 10% of my time on my home building company. A few client meetings here or there, some job site meetings here or there, occasionally some pre-construction meetings, but almost never sales meetings. My team does that for me. Like I'm not in those meetings very often. So it's kind of fun. I still remember reading the book years ago. I remember reading the E-Myth book, which basically talks about how most trade contractors and builders are former tradesmen who were good at their trade and then started a business. That was basically me. And you got to move to actually becoming a business owner so that you don't have a day-to-day role in your job if you really want to scale and have a business that's going to be around. And so here I am 20 years later. It's taken me a while to get there. But now I'm in a position where I am truly a business owner and not an employee who owns my own job. And I got to tell you, I feel incredibly blessed. I suspect a bunch of the folks in the comments are in that position as well. But there's probably some folks that are, you know, me from 10 years ago that are looking to get there. And this wasn't a setup, but I would tell you one awesome thing about BTA, if you're watching this, they're a fabulous organization that really helps you organize your business for profit. And they, in effect, are your general manager. You know, you're going to be assigned a coach, a business coach. You're going to get together with a group of peers that are like-minded and that you can really best practice with and benchmark with. And, you know, had I not hired my general manager in 2015, I think a a similar outcome to where I am today would have been starting with BTA in that time period. So that's just my quick story, Danny.
That's great. Thanks, man. No, I mean, and thanks for the testimony. I mean, on our end, I find that for a lot of us, it's like we are so good at our craft and we think to be able to get bigger, we need to be better at our craft, but it's the business side that trips all of us up. And I've noticed this with the 10 years I've done this with this entire industry, there's no one leading the way on this. And I think eMyth is actually really interesting because it is the whole concept is that you can be the most expert craftsman ever, but you'll never get to you'll hit a glass ceiling if you don't start to work on the actual business side and how you fit even within that organization. A lot of us, we're not built as business people. We're built as craftspeople. And so this is why we exist. So quick thoughts here. We're at the top of the hour. I want to give you all you guys your resources. So Aaron, if you're there, can you throw in the link for all this stuff? So we're going to give everyone today a budgeting tool, a sales pipelining tool. So that tool I was showing you earlier, and that forecasting tool. So you can actually put all this into these charts and start to make a plan for 2025. And I'd be curious to know of everyone that in the chat right now, of all the things we've talked about today, from how to budget your business, how to build out your sales pipelines, your forecasting stuff, even how to manage your team a little more, what is the one thing that you would like to implement? Because this is a 1-hour webinar and I get we can't like change lives in 1 hour, but I do think these tools can make a bit of a difference. So what is that one thing? So Tom, we've got budgeting. Cool. There's a lot of us budgeting. Let me know. And as you're working on this stuff, as you're downloading this stuff, I would square away an hour or maybe five to start to work on these things and start to see if in 2025 we can make a little bit of shifts, right? Because this game is won and lost between these 1% all over our organization. You'll also see as you click on the link, Aaron, I can put it up for everyone. I don't know if you put it in there yet. Oh, there it is in the bottom left corner. I don't know if did it show up there. Yeah. As you click on that, there we go. As you click on this link, you'll also get a chance to be able to let us know if you want to chat. So we have 650 active companies right now we're working with, all in the contracting space, all building out tools just like this. And essentially, what are they trying to do? They're trying to build out a system that doesn't require them to be the expert of all things. They can put in a good team and manage it effectively. It starts with financials, but then it gets into the stuff I was just talking to you about, where we're taking the dashboard, we're enabling our org structure more effectively, we're building a proper job description so everyone knows what their role actually is. We're recruiting more effectively. I think it's a massive thing. Our people are our business. We can put in training and standard offering procedures. It's interesting. Our team built the entire playbook for your construction business. It's already done. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. And we're slowly coaching that into the organization. If you want to chat with our team about that, just make sure you click the yes, you'd like to know a bit more. And we'll get in touch with you on that. And there's also with Matt, a sick event coming up. Matt, do you want to speak to this? This is another cool thing. You'll see in there, you can check off that you want to chat or you want to come out to this Build Show Live event. Matt, do you want to speak to this?
I forgot we had this slide. I was just putting this down. Right, Danny. Build Show Live is our big annual event. It's in, we've only done it once before. So we had our first annual, but now this is our second annual. We're in Dallas this year. Unfortunately, the Austin Convention Center is currently getting rebuilt. So we'll be back in Austin in 2029 when the convention center reopens. But in the meantime, we're going to go to Dallas this year. And I think we've already booked San Antonio for the following year. But something that's different about our event is you get to meet all of our Build Show Network people, including Danny and the BTA team. Aaron's behind the scenes helping with chat, but they got a fabulous team at BTA. They give a bunch of live presentations. All the rest of the Build Show Network folks are going to be there as well. And one really interesting thing about our show is we get to job sites the day before the show opens on the VIP pass. It's a little pricey. It's like $1,200 or something for a VIP pass, but it's limited to 300 people. And we're going to two different Brent Hall job sites, as well as we have a pre-party and we have a master builder class by Brent Hall that morning as well, that I'm looking forward to taking myself. I'll be a crowd member for that. So if you guys have time, thank you, Jim Gunn, for your comment. It was incredible. We'd love to have you guys join us in Dallas this year, the 16th through the 18th. If you go to buildshowlive.com where that little RSVP button is, you can add your email to get notified because tickets go on sale, if I remember correctly, the first of next month. And we're hoping/expecting the VIP is going to sell out within a couple, 3 weeks or so, because we only have 300 tickets. So we'd love to have you there. Thanks for the allowing me to hit the plug, Danny.
No worries, man. Actually, I see it already in there a bit, but if you've been, let us know what your thoughts are, because I think overall, it's one thing to sit in your office and just ponder about all the things you should go do. It's another thing to be surrounded by your peers. We can share ideas and collaborate a lot easier in person. So you'll see that in the drop-down menu as you go. Fill out your name, number, email, all your stuff. From there, you'll get these downloads for free. So make sure you grab them. You see an opportunity if you want to connect with Breakthrough Academy, how we can help you in your business. So see a little drop-down to let us know if you'd like to do that. And you'll see a drop-down to let Matt's team know if you're interested in coming to that event. But yeah, I think like gone are the days of just trying to sit alone and figure this stuff out. Through technology, the internet, all the things that have come over the last 10, 15 years, this space is finally evolving. And you don't have to go and reinvent this wheel alone. Matt, you've done a phenomenal job just being an influencer in this space. You've helped, I don't even know, probably millions of people at this point.
Certainly tens of folks.
Tens of folks. And
it's not a round dozen or so people. They're all here on the chat. Thank you guys for the nice comments.
You've brought a lot of people together. You've brought this industry together, actually, in a lot of ways. So thank you for doing that. We do our part. We will help you systemize and structure your company for growth and make sure you don't have these missteps. And I see it. There's patterns in business. We all have the same kind of like similar issues, the same things we're trying to figure out, and you don't need to do it alone. And I think just through the network that you've built, Matt, through what we do at Breakthrough Academy, the answers are here. Like, we don't have to sit and wonder anymore. And we don't have to go through some of the same stuff that you went through 20 years ago.
Yeah.
If we choose not to. But it is really a choice, right? Or we could just go get busy putting our nose back into our books or back into our sights in the next hour.
We like to say that it's a movement and not a moment, Danny, that, you know, one of the things that I think myself and all the other builders that are a part of the Build Show Live and Build Show Network, we really feel like, gosh, we've made a lot of mistakes over the years, whether it's business mistakes or building science mistakes, client mistakes. And we're willing and want to share that wisdom. You know, I, like a lot of the folks, have kids. I have a 17-year-old that said he wants to take over my business. And so it's really motivating me to say, you know, let's make sure that my business is in a really good place. So when my son takes over someday, he won't have those same pitfalls and stumbles that I had as a first generation builder trying to figure it out on my own. So, Danny, I want to say thanks to you and your BTA team, too. I mean, what you guys are doing for our industry is vital. And one of the cool things about what you and I both do is we make a profit and we pay our mortgages, but we're helping people in their personal and their professional lives to run a great business, to run an organization that's going to be profitable and be around for that next generation. It's very, very fulfilling to me. And I know it is for you and your team too, Danny, to see these companies thriving, building great houses, becoming more profitable, and thinking about generational wealth and how do I pass down this asset that I've built of a company, or frankly, this asset that I've built as a house to that next generation. So thank you for all you do too, Danny, and the rest of your team.
It's been a ride. It's been fun. We've learned a ton. You know, the amount that we've learned just from working with the people we work with is probably 3/4 of the program at this point. So we've got a couple of questions. Matt, I know you're tight for time. We've got 5 minutes. Matt, if you go to the questions section, you should see them. Chad has a question for you at the top. Can you provide some input on, as a developer, I own the lots. I sell with homes. Should this be split from the builder profits in order to accurately calculate job profitability?
You better answer that one, Danny. That's not in my wheelhouse.
Oh, it's been got. Oh, there it is. Can you provide some input on, as a developer, I own the lots and I sell with homes. Should this be split from builder? Yes, it should be. You have two businesses, right? Your building of these homes is an entirely different business than the investment portfolio that you have. And in some level should be considered two entirely different companies, because otherwise you're not going to be able to see the performance of your actual build product and what you're putting out there versus your investor portfolio. They're two very different things. Brett says, Matt, when did you finally hire a full-time pre-construction person or manager?
Ooh, great question. You know, I really had somebody doing that in the early teens, doing pre-construction. But what really changed my thinking on that was when I started thinking about how we needed to be both on time and profitable on our jobs in the, you know, 10 years-ish ago range. And now I actually have a full-time person on my staff who's a licensed architect, who's not doing architecture,
but it's simply interfacing with outside architects. We're kind of an old school general contractor where we don't do design. We're working with architects who are doing design for our clients, for their clients. And so I have a full-time person that does nothing but pre-construction. And rarely is she dealing with houses after construction starts. Then once the house starts under construction, then the person's main point of contact is my executive project manager. You guys may have seen him on social media. His name is Daniel Glauser, Glauser Building on Instagram. And so Chelsea, who does pre-construction, has basically a handoff point with Daniel, who's my executive PM. And so all she's really dealing with is pre-construction.
One for BTA here. Do you help grow companies from owner operator to scaling strategist? Yes, we do. And actually I moved off the slide because for time, but here is our ideal customer. So just like you guys have a pick list of your customers, we do too. obviously you need to own a contracting business. So this is for the owners of organizations. Most of the people we work with are between 1 and 15 million in construction revenue. They've been in business for a few years, so it's not startup phase. They want to grow. We're not there to motivate you. We're there to help guide you. You want to build a fully systemized organization. You want to develop as a leader. Spend a lot of time on this. You like to mastermind with other people. You're not just hard holding your cards close to your chest, worried about what people see about you. Like, you're willing to be open and share and learn from others actually as well. You want to be challenged and held accountable. Like Matt was saying, we have a coach that's going to do that. So get ready to have a bit of a boss, which I think will be helpful. And I think what we're both doing, what we're talking about is just, it's, you want to be a part of professionalizing this industry. We're on our way. I'd say we're one third to about halfway there. I think in the next 10 years, this entire industry will be a very different place than it was 10, 15 years ago. So we're on a mission to do that. But that is our ideal client, if you guys want to know. What else do we have in here? Matt, how are you doing for time? You've got a jet in 3 minutes. Let me
see. I got a jet in 3 minutes. I got to get on a 2:15.
Can you answer one or should I let you? I got one for you.
Hit
one
more.
Can you share more detail on percentages you use in your cost plus process?
That's a little bit,
too specific.
Yeah, maybe a little specific, but I'll give you some general. How about that? You know, we're cost plus. And so we have a fee that we charge clients on basically every invoice that comes in. And one thing that we did about, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago is we switched from a monthly, project management fee that was a fixed fee per month. And it went up over the years, but I remember originally starting at like, well, we're cost plus, but we charge $5,000 a month for supervision. And that went up to, you know, $7,510 and maybe $12,500. We switched to hourly 7, 8 years ago, and that's been a game changer for us. And so when we go to contract with someone, we publish our hourly rates for all the folks in our company. We also do a pre-construction agreement where we charge hourly for our estimating time. And so we're really charging, we're really kind of training our clients from pre-construction early on to say, you know, our time's valuable. And just like you pay your lawyer and you don't have a problem when your lawyer sends you a bill every month for 12 or 15 or 30 hours of his or her time, we do the same. You know, here's your monthly invoice for your estimating time in pre-construction. So when they think about meetings with us and the amount of work they give us, give me an estimate on this, this, and this, we're happy to. But this is our hourly charge for that. You know, we're training them early on that it costs money to do these things. So then when we charge them hourly for supervision, we give them the rate chart and actually have kind of two classes of folks. I guess there's a few more than that, but I have assistant project managers. I have an executive PM and then Tim, who's my business partner. His title's founding partner, and we charge the highest rate for Tim. I don't bill to jobs. My name's not even on that chart because we're telling people right away, hey, Matt's not your builder, right? You're going to see Matt occasionally at the office. You're going to see him occasionally at the job, but don't assume that Matt's out on your job every day and he's not coming to every meeting. And we make that real clear at the start. And that's honestly how I've been able to move a little bit from day-to-day builder and having to be at every meeting, having to be at every job site to an owner of a company rather than owning my own job. So hopefully that gives you some insight into what that cost plus looks like for us.
Cool. All right, Mom. On Earth, put some time. I know you're tight. 12:15. It is, well, Pacific time, 12:15.
So I got to bounce.
we'll let you head out. Thanks for joining us, Matt. Everyone, give Matt a big thank you. Matt.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. Appreciate your support. I'll see you guys at Build Show Live in Dallas, Texas in the fall. Danny, Aaron, behind the scenes. Thanks, guys. We'll see y'all later.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Bye now.
I'll close this out here. If anybody hasn't yet, make sure you get the downloads. Aaron, if you want to put the link back up for everybody, it's like you just did. Let's get the budgeting tool moving for you guys who don't have a budget. For those who don't have a sales pipeline, make sure you start writing down your sales the people in your sales pipeline so you can start to pick from them properly. And this forecasting tool is massive. Take time to play around with these things. I think for a lot of us, it's a lot easier to see what's coming 6 months, 12 months in advance and start to make adjustments than to be in the month of things happening and suddenly have to make adjustments. These tools are all meant to do this. They're completely free. Take them and use them. Head out to the Build Show Live if you can make it. It looks like it's going to be an awesome time. I'll be there myself as well. So come say hi. And if you're interested in Breakthrough Academy, let us know. Let's at least start the conversation a little bit. Let's see where we can help you guys. So other than that, thanks for joining us. I think everybody hopefully got something out of this. And take some of these tools. Go take some time. Schedule away some space in the next week or two and start building this for 2025. So in that, good luck. I'll see some of you at the Build Show Live convention. And yeah, have a good week. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.